All right. Hello, everyone. This is Wild and White Blazing, a class for women playing Hike the AT, and we have a special guest. This is a special call this evening. Betty Lou Higgins is here, and she's an expert on Grandma Gatewood, who is the first woman to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail. And we're so excited to have her tell us about all the work that she's doing around programs about Betty Lou and all the things that she knows about Betty Lou, about Grandma Gatewood. And
I
everything
can tell you
she knows
about Betty
her.
Lou.
Yes, well, you can start with that. So, yeah, so please tell us about yourself and about this, how you came to be involved in this.
Well,
and who you are, work with, yes.
Who am I? Well, I'm with Eden Valley Enterprises, and we're a theater group in northeastern Ohio that specializes in basically creating theater programs for other organizations. Most of our work is commissioned. A group like a museum or some other type of organization will come to us and say, here's our idea. We want to know if this can be done in some type of a program, and then we'll research it and write it and in some cases perform it. And then most of the times those types of programs become part of our repertoire, and then we can go out into the community and perform them again for other organizations who are interested in that topic. So this particular program started because Liz McQuaid of the Buckeye Trail Association, who's a friend of mine, had called me in 2009 to ask me if they could hire me to be the voiceover for a program that they were doing in honor of the Buckeye Trail's 50th anniversary. So during the course of that project, they sent me a script, and I was reading through the script, and it mentioned Emma Gatewood, who was one of the Buckeye Trail's founders. And then there were a couple of sentences following that that mentioned that she was the first woman to solo through hike the Appalachian Trail, which made me come to a full stop. And I called Liz back, and I said, well, never mind the Buckeye Trail. Who in the world is Emma Gatewood, and what is her story? And so she put me in touch with Lucy Seeds, who is Emma's youngest daughter, and Lucy talked. We had a conversation that went on for well over an hour that first time, I think, and she shared the story of Emma with me and ended by saying that she was really interested in having someone maybe publish Emma's diaries or have a movie made about her or something and didn't know what to do. So at that time, I was thinking, well, I'm going to write a story about Emma that would go with our Women's History Storytelling Program or our Remarkable Ohioan Storytelling Program. But I told her I'd poke around and see if I could find out anything about books or publishing or TV or something. Well, I contacted Peter Houston of Film Effects, who I'd worked with on another project, told him the story. I said, are you interested in this at all? He said, oh, yes, I am. And so here we are now, like 4 years later, working on a documentary. We've completed a storytelling program. We've completed an e-book, which is for sale on our website. We have a DVD of the performance of the storytelling program, which is also available for sale on our website. And now we're working on a first-person character program, which will premiere in August of 2013. And we're still raising money for the eventual documentary, which is going to be broadcast on WGTE PBS Toledo. So that's sort of the background of Eden Valley and this amazing project about such a remarkable woman.
Well, very cool. So tell us about what you have found out about Emma Gatewood and maybe I'm not sure everybody who's going to listen to this call knows everything about her. Some of us know more about her than others. So you may want to start with the general and to get specific. But, yeah, tell us about her experience with the Appalachian Trail or how this came to pass.
Well, Emma grew up in Gallipolis, Ohio, which is a small town along the Ohio River. And she grew up in that area. and eventually married a man named Terry Clayton Gatewood, who liked to be called PC. And PC, they later moved to Virginia for a while, and they had a farm. He was basically a farmer, although he taught for a while. But the bigger story in their relationship was that he abused her. And, of course, this was a time in the early 1900s when you didn't talk about abuse, and there were cases where he would beat her in front of the field hands, and the field hands would cheer him on, and that kind of thing. It wasn't considered anything bad by a lot of people. It was considered private between husband and wife. Emma and Perry had 11 children.
Wow.
And
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so it was, that by itself would be enough of a story, you know, to be amazing. They were married when in 1907. She was 19 and he was 27 years old at the time. And they had 11 children, and they did not get divorced until, I believe, not yet, in September 1940. He beat her so badly that she finally got a divorce. In 1938, she actually left for a while and went to California because her face had been beaten out of recognition 10 times that year. So it was clearly not a marriage made in heaven. By 1954, she was all of her children were on their own. They were all adults. And she was reading a 1949 edition of National Geographic. And there was an article in there about the Appalachian Trail, which was relatively new at the time. And the writer happened to mention that up till that point, no woman had ever hiked the entire trail alone. So Emma decided that she ought to be the one to do it at 67 years old. So in 1954, she made her first attempt. She didn't take much with her. She'd never hiked seriously before, although she'd done a lot of walking, and she worked on a farm all of her life, and she raised 11 kids, so it wasn't like she was weak or anything. She started in Maine at Mount Katahdin and started to hike southward. She didn't get very far. She got lost, broke her glasses, and ended up getting rescued by some rangers who told her she ought to go home and give up hiking. And basically she agreed with them, but privately she was already calculating what to do for the next trip. And so in 1955, she took off again. This time she started in Mount Oglethorpe, Georgia, and headed north. And this trip was successful. Now, in both of these cases, she left without telling any of her family where she was going or what she was doing. So they had no idea what was going on here. And when she got back the first year after she failed, she just told anyone who asked that she'd climbed Mount Katahdin and didn't mention what her original plan was. Excuse me. And the second year, as she was nearing the completion, word had kind of gotten out that there was this grandmother alone on the trail making a complete hike, and reporters were starting to arrive, and she realized the story was going to get out. And so rather than let her family read about her in the newspaper, she started sending out postcards to tell them where she was and what she was doing so they wouldn't be shocked. And in fact, her oldest daughter, Esther, got her postcard like a day before it hit the newspapers. But Esther said she wasn't particularly surprised because her mother had always had a mind of her own. So she finished that hike and basically kind of became a star. She actually went back and hiked it two more times after that. She Later went and hiked the Oregon Trail in honor of the Oregon Bicentennial. She then got involved with the people who established the Buckeye Trail. She worked to get that established. And finally, by the time she died, she had hiked some 10,000 miles.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
she
impressive.
Was 85 when she died, and so between mm-hmm. 1960, between the time she was 67 years old and the time she was 85 years old, she'd done all that hiking.
Well, that's good news for the rest of us, and that was back when they didn't even have, you know, half the stuff we have. But
she was clearly, without knowing it, she was a pioneer in the traveling light movement. She didn't even take a tent with her. She didn't take anything really except a backpack that she made, not a backpack like we know it, more of a knapsack that she threw her things in, and that was it, and a shower curtain. And she slept on the ground. She slept under picnic tables. She slept on rocks, you know, wherever she can hide, and asked for shelter along the way. And if someone was willing to let her sleep on the porch or in the barn or wherever, that's where she slept. So it was truly a real rough back to nature kind of hike.
Yeah. What else about her hike do we know at this point? Because I'm sure people are curious about that.
Well, at the time, a lot of private property was adjacent to the hike. So while she was alone on the trail, she wasn't necessarily isolated. And so she was able to make those side trips onto neighboring farms and ask for food or shelter or things like that. She had a lot of interesting experiences, as you would imagine. One time she went up to a cabin and an elderly man answered the door. And she asked him if he had any food to share, and he invited her in. And she saw a big pot of beans on the stove, and he picked up a ladle and then proceeded to wipe the ladle off with a washcloth kind of thing that was so black it could practically stand up on its own. It was so dirty. And then he picked up a plate and wiped the plate with the same dirty rag. And then spooned out the beans and handed them to her, and she figured, well, if it hasn't killed him, it won't kill me. So she ate it. She met up with a woman who had 17 children.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, she wanted to sleep at their house, and the woman, you know, said yes. They wouldn't turn anyone away, but Emma was starting to have second doubts about this because the woman that was dirty and looked like she hadn't washed in months. And finally, the man of the house came home, found out that Emma had not bothered to tell anyone where she was or what she was doing, and he thought that was awful, so he told her she couldn't stay there. So that kind of eliminated that. She had to watch out for snakes and other animals, of course, and during the first 1,500 miles of her hike, she actually saw two copperheads and two rattlesnakes, but she did not get bit. In fact, she wrote in her diary that on one particular day she heard a noise, and I'm reading this now, that she thought was a bird of some kind. "I felt something hit my dungarees and looked down and saw a large rattler coiled. I had my cane ready to put down, and it went between the snake's head and me. I gave a jump sideways and went on without being bitten. It was the first rattler I'd seen on my trip." So she did encounter animals, too.
Yeah, there are snakes out there.
Yeah.
I can remember people saying, "Hey, there's a snake back there," and sometimes it was gone by the time I got there. And sometimes, yeah, they are out there, even today. So I'm curious about something. Does anyone know why, or do her children now know why she elected to not tell people? She just didn't trust that they were going to leave her alone to do it, or some other reason?
Yeah, mostly it was she didn't want anyone trying to talk her out of it. Mm-hmm. Because she figured that that's, you know, exactly what would happen. And it mm-hmm. probably would have, to, or at least mm-hmm. they'd have made attempts. Whether she actually would have been talked out of it or not is debatable. Mm-hmm. But after that, you know, she did it again. And when she did it the first time, you know, they didn't really feel upset about any of the rest of her hiking. She kind of became a pop cultural icon. She was mm-hmm. on the Dave Garroway show. She was on with Groucho Marx. She was on with Art Linkletter. I actually saw the Groucho Marx program.
Huh.
Lucy has a copy of that program. It's very uncomfortable to watch it, knowing what we know now, because mm-hmm. at the time, no one knew about the abuse. And mm-hmm. she was on the show with a writer who, unfortunately, his name I forget. Well, during the course of the interview with Groucho and this writer, they were making some comments about women and taking care of their husbands and kind of the stand-by-your-man kind of mentality. And you know, they clearly had no idea what her background was. And they were joking around about this, and watching it now, it just kind of makes you squirm to know that she was standing there smiling away and keeping quiet. And at one point, the writer even asked her a pointed question about, well, don't you agree with all of this? And, you know, she kind of just had to take it, with because otherwise the only other option was to announce it on national television, you know. So, it was a interesting TV show from this perspective, you know.
Mm-hmm. There seem to be a lot of myths out there about Grandma Gatewood Emma Gatewood versus, you know, I don't know how much of it is true. I know that I've heard that she got lost and turned around a lot, or people would see her and she was going the wrong way, but I don't know if that's actually true.
The only time we know for certain that she got lost was on that first trip. Yeah. I didn't come across any other information that she got lost on the other two trips. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because of the quantity that she kept journals all of her life, her daughter Lucy is in Florida. I'm in Ohio. She has quite a few of them. And then I spoke with her great-granddaughter Marjorie Wood, who lives in Gallipolis, which is a good 5 hours south of where I live. So I never actually have been able to actually sit down and read through all of the journals, or even just all of the 1955 trip. So,
yeah, it seems that she's famous enough now that somebody would want to, you know, make those into a book. People would snap that stuff up, I would think.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what Lucy was hoping for, but I have no connection to actually that. And Marjorie has a lot of the diaries, and I know now she's working on scanning a lot of them into the computer, so at least they'll be in some format. And Lucy and Marjorie were both kind enough to let me read portions of it, and as we were going along, they would scan things when I had questions about a specific item, and then they would email the portion of the diary to me. So we got a lot of her diary sent to us in pieces parts, but nothing continuous. But neither Marjorie nor Lucy ever mentioned her getting lost other than that first trip. So
I don't know if that's just, you know, a... Well, you know, it's just one of those, I don't know, those things that just little myths and things. And,
well,
and she wore,
in fact,
go ahead.
The fact that she was lost once, you know, how that kind of then suddenly.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm lost a million times.
Right.
I haven't lost her before.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think there's anybody who's hiked the A2 who's never gotten turned around. I certainly did. You know,
how could you not?
And especially back then, it was a very different trail. It was not nearly so well marked or laid out as it is today.
Right. That's another interesting thing about her. Because she was immediately being sort of bombarded by what we would call paparazzi, and she was not one to hold back on her opinion, she was telling people about the fact that the trail was not in the wonderful shape that the AT people would have you believe. And so the AT people at the time were not really pleased about her because she was kind of making them look bad. By the same token, by her saying that publicly, it sort of spurred on people to upgrade the trail and make it what it is today. So, you know, the good and bad of that was that Emma told it like it was, but it also managed to get it fixed. So,
I'm curious if people have questions about Emma, things that you would like to know about her experience or her story. If anybody came with questions, you're like, oh, I need to know this.
I knew nothing until today, so this is enlightening, and I look forward to looking at the ebook and the DVD, and I hope you'll put
we'll put the links up. We'll put all the information up so you can look at it. Yeah. Anybody else? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, just so they know, that when you put the link up, we have a lot of information on our website about various parts of the project, since it is a multi-part project. The storytelling program is up and running, and it's available for presentation with groups. So if any of you have a group that would like a presentation, you can feel free to give me a call and we can make arrangements for that. The first-person character program won't premiere till August, but then that, too, will also be available for live presentations as well. So,
yeah, I think people will be happy to just support this, you know, or just I'm curious to find out more about her story. Somebody have a question?
I'm also interested in the Buckeye Trail Association. I'm an Ohio girl, so I look forward to hearing more or reading more about
that too. Oh, great. If you're, I don't know where you are in Ohio, but this Sunday, January 27th, I'll be doing the storytelling program at the North Bridgeville Library up in Lorain County. So if you're anywhere near there, it's a free performance at 3 o'clock, and there's complete information on the website about that as well. So if anyone's in the Ohio area, I hope they'll come and see me.
Oh, neat.
I just grew up there, so.
I'm sorry?
I'm in Connecticut, but I grew up there, so that's why I always like to, check it out.
Yeah. Well, she not only was a founder of the Buckeye Trail, but in Hocking Hills, there's a portion of the trail there that's actually called the Grandma Gatewood Trail. It was her favorite part of the area, and Bob Evans of Bob Evans Farms, as in go to Bob Evans restaurants, was one of the people responsible for getting that part of the trail named after her.
So what kinds of things, what are the things that we don't know about? Like, what are some other things, or are there other things that people generally don't know about Emma Gatewood besides the things that you've told us?
Well, I'm not really sure what people, do or do not know about her. I think probably the most interesting thing is to realize that at an age when, particularly in her time in the country's life, a 67-year-old was usually sitting back and taking it easy, the fact that she started this sort of hiking career at that age is unusual, and the fact that she didn't just do it once and say, okay, I did it, but continued to hike. The Oregon Trail, I think, in many ways, was probably a much more exhausting feat than the Appalachian Trail because, I don't know about you, but I hate being out in the sun for any length of time. Mm-hmm. And that trail, more of it was along open highway and in the open area. And so there wasn't, you couldn't hide under a tree. You couldn't, get in the shade, that kind of thing. She carried an umbrella with her for to help protect her from the sun and from the wind and the dirt being kicked up by the trucks on the highway, on the portions that were on the highway. So I think in many ways that was probably a more strenuous hike that she made. The interesting thing about that hike is she started out trying to she was going to hike with a wagon train that was going to follow the trail, and it was, you know, a big thing for the Oregon Centennial. So she gets to Missouri and finds out the wagon train left without her. Well, instead of turning around and going home, she decides, oh, well, I'll just walk it by myself. So she takes off, and she beats the wagon train to Portland, Oregon, by something like it was a full week ahead of time before the wagon train came in.
They had to keep digging their wagons out of the ruts. She could just walk.
Yeah. In the meantime, of course, everybody's following her around with cameras, and she used to call the photographers the skunks with cameras. She didn't like the skunks. And a lot of them, of course, were rude, and she would get rude right back. Well, one time she, during this whole session in Oregon while she was there, she was tired. She sat down to rest. A reporter comes up to her. His name was Robert Hall, was the photographer that was with him. And she starts talking, and Robert aims the camera at her. And she was so exhausted and so upset, and she just didn't want anything to do with it, and she bonked him on the head with her umbrella. Well, his forehead started to bleed. She got totally upset over the fact that she had done this and was immediately, you know, upset about all this, and she just started to cry. She was all upset. Someone had to offer her a hamburger and a glass of cold water before she calmed down. And later, Robert was quoted as saying, "She hits like a mule."
Wow.
But everything was okay. People apparently forgave her. The governor of Oregon declared that she'd be the ambassador at large at the Oregon Centennial. She got the keys to the cities of Portland, Medford, and Seaside. And in her honor, all women age 65 or older got in for free. So it was a big deal when she finished the Oregon Centennial.
Oh, wow. Well, it's interesting. I mean, for somebody, like you said, during that time period, at that age, to make a trek and then continue to make treks like that, she definitely wasn't a shrinking violet. She had gone through a lot in her life. And so I think sometimes we want these, we want to make them into characters who are sort of one-dimensional and just that's all that's about. Oh, they were, you know, kind of romantically hiked the trail, you know, instead of, you know, that they had emotions and that they could get upset if somebody was pointing a camera at them or whatever, you know, and that they, it sounds like she was quite a spitfire.
Yeah. And I mean, you can imagine she surely did not have the kind of cameramen following her around that stars today have.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was just as emotional and upsetting to her and at her age. And, you know, we tend to sometimes look at our celebrities and not think about, like you said, the fact that they too have emotions about what's happening to them and who's following around them with a camera, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So
do you know much about just any other specifics about what she, you said she didn't carry very much. I know she was kind of considered one of the very first light, you know, she was kind of an ultralight hiker before that term became well known, and that she hiked in like maybe Keds or just some kind of a tennis shoe. Is that correct,
we know,
or is that
for
another
sure
myth?
No, that's not a myth. She bought regular canvas tennis shoes. They weren't the kind, you know, that we look at hikers today with the fancy hiking shoes and that kind of stuff. They were canvas tennis shoes. And we know for a fact that at least one of them were high-top Converse shoes.
Oh!
one of the pairs is in the museum in Gallipolis, Ohio, and I have a picture of it on my website. You can clearly read the label Converse on it. So that is not a myth. What tends to be a myth, as best we can tell, is the idea that she wore Keds. Now, according to Lucy, It's entirely possible that she wore Keds, but back then they called all canvas tennis shoes Keds.
So, right.
She said, I can't prove or disprove that, but we know that one of them for sure was a Converse.
Okay.
And she went through six pairs of shoes in the, on that 1955 trek.
Wow.
So that, yeah. And her shoe, her feet swelled from 8C to 8D, and she lost 30 pounds in that one trek. You asked what she was carrying. In 1955, she took a blanket, a plastic shower sheet, a cup, a canteen and baby bottle for water, a small pot, a spoon, a Swiss Army knife, a first aid kit, pins, a flashlight, a piece of rope, a raincoat, a warm coat, and a change of clothes. Notice, she did not take a compass, a guidebook of the trail, a tent, a sleeping bag, or a backpack. For food, she carried dried beef, cheese, and nuts, and mainly she planned to find fruits growing along the way to supplement her meals. She did use a walking stick of sassafras, and she did carry candied mints in case she got an upset stomach. So that was her get-up-and-go outfit.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you really don't need, you know, we those magazines make us think we need all that gear and all that fancy stuff. You just need to go out there and start walking.
Apparently, yes.
Yes,
although that's more than I could do.
Anytime I go, you know, it's like there's some shift that happened. And most of us, I think, are old enough to remember when we were able to actually go out for more than 2 hours, like, anywhere without a water bottle. And somehow
yes.
now we all need to carry our water bottles with us and a snack. You know, I don't remember ever having a snack as a child in a car, ever.
No, I don't either. And, in fact, I still won't carry a water bottle with me unless there's some driving reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just am like, really? I've gotten along this long in my life without carrying water with me. I've got to start this now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think about, I think there's a quote from John Muir where he used to go, you know, hopping around in Sierras and he would throw a couple of biscuits in his pocket and that's all he would have for a while. And so anytime, and I remember that brought me comfort when I was hiking the AT. You know, I would think, okay, John Muir, you know, so don't worry if you don't have this or that. Everything's going to be fine. John Muir went all over the Sierras with two biscuits in his pocket.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, for me? Okay.
Or actually for the group.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking to our videographer, who's Peter Houston from Film Effects. He's working on some new ideas to incorporate into the documentary. And he was recently up in the Mount Katahdin area and spoke to some rangers about Emma and about the trek. And they have put him onto an idea of sort of weaving into our story the idea of trail magic and the people who come and help other hikers or who leave food along the trail for them or help them out in some way. And so my question is, if anyone out there has actually experienced any trail magic, if they could email it to me or give me a call or something, we're trying to collect some of those stories to include in the documentary in some way.
Oh, cool. I think anybody who's hiked the trail for even more than a few days may have experienced trail magic. It's, some trail magic stories are more magical than others, you know, and sometimes it's just a cooler in the woods that has Cokes or fruit or something exciting or candy or snacks. It is amazing the number of people that will help you. I just had people finding me, giving me rides, all kinds of things. So, sure people will be happy to tell their trail magic
stories. We have a lot of instances where people, like even the man with the dirty rag, gave Emma food.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in many cases back then, she had to look for their house or their wherever they were. But
mm-hmm.
they were very kind to her in any event. And
mm-hmm.
so that kind of is what, you know, even back then when it wasn't as well-traveled and there
mm-hmm.
wasn't as populous, there was that giving that happened. And so that's kind
mm-hmm.
of what we'd like to focus on part of our story.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. And now there's, you know, anyone who hikes the trail wants to go back and pay it forward to the next set of hikers. I know I've gone out, like, if any time I'm even within, I don't know, 10 miles, 20 miles, if I go up that corridor and I'm near the Appalachian Trail, I have to go over to the trail and see if I can find any thru-hikers to help. And I, you know, if I'm going at the right time of year, I fill my trunk up with all kinds of things, or I've done, like, mimosa parties on the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Oh, my goodness.
And donuts, and, you know, and now that I know what people want, you know, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to have wipes, and I'm going to have, you know, everybody's so
excited. You're going to have what?
A wet wipe, you know.
Oh, okay.
Because people are dirty and they're so excited to wipe off their hands before you feed them whatever you're going to feed them. So, yeah, there's and people did those things for me. I remember, you know, showing up somewhere and there'd be a big cookout going on, and it was for the hikers, you know,
oh
from
my
strangers.
God.
Very special, yeah.
Yes, by all means, send me emails with these kinds of stories, because that would be great for our documentary and any other information, and whether or not you want yourself listed in any particular way or whatever. No clue right now how this will become incorporated, because he just got back from Maine recently, so this is a new idea that we have. So,
sounds good.
We're working on that part of it.
Yeah, we have, and we have stories that aren't just about food, about people just getting exactly what they needed at the right time. Like one of our faculty members, her hammock broke or something on the very first couple of days, and she told a story of how this man showed up with I think it was the Hennessy guy himself. See, this is the problem. These things get blown up, you know, or I can't remember what she said. But she did get a new hammock, like, immediately, like within 24 hours or 48 hours of needing this. It just came to her. It's
oh
those kinds
God.
Of things that just are really incredible. It's like we're really, when you're on the AT, you're just tuned into that frequency or something.
Yeah.
And things come as you, because you have no choice but to ask and seek help. Whereas in regular life, we kind of get very independent and think, oh, we've got to take care of ourselves, so we're not even putting out the request, sort of, even in our minds, that somebody might be able to help us. So it's interesting. And it sounds like back then, Emma, and maybe even just in general, people, you know, if a stranger came to your house, you sat them down and gave them a meal. That was more part of what people did back then.
Well, you know, and Emma grew up during the Depression.
Right.
And so, you know, people were always helping each other out, and you hear the countless stories of the hobos that would come through town and want to trade a day's work for some food. So that was more of our culture back then, and there was less fear of the stranger than we have now, too. So I find it interesting that so many people, since we've just started talking about the trail magic idea, even here, we've got people saying about how on the AT that is such a big thing, and that even in this time of fear, when so many people are afraid to talk to each other, that they'll help people out on the AT.
Yeah,
I must do it on the Buckeye Trail, too. But
right, well, I don't know. I mean, some of it seems, I mean, I think a lot of these long-distance trails, former hikers help each other, and also just people along the trail who are just really supportive. But there was a guy at this who was talking about how when he was a hiker, he started to be more fearful in towns than he was on the trail, because he knew, not really fearful, but just it would shift, because out in the trail, there was just this sense of community and people were looking out for each other, whereas in town he felt like that wasn't necessarily the case. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. I have a question about her daughter or her kids and kind of what their whole take on this. And, you know,
well,
because if she was in her 60s, they were in their, you know, they were adults. Like when she came back now that you've talked to them now, what do they think about all of this?
Well, as far as I can tell, none of them were terribly surprised that she decided to do it, and all of them in their own way were basically proud of her. Emma's family as a whole, and I've managed to have the good fortune to talk to quite a few of them, have been absolutely wonderful and supportive of this whole event, and the ones that I have talked to, just talking to them has been like, once I start talking to them, it's like I've known them all my life. Lucy let me and Peter, our videographer, we went down to Florida on a grant from the Ohio Humanities Council, the Buckeye Trail Association, and the National Storytelling Network gave us a grant to do the initial research. We went to Florida to meet with her. She led us into her house. She had a whole display. She brought out all the memorabilia she had. We spent 2 days with her getting the on-camera footage, some of which is up on our website. And she just was a delight. And since then, we've interviewed on camera Marjorie Wood, her great-granddaughter. I've done audio interviews with her other sister, Louise, and her granddaughter, Emma's granddaughter, Lucy's sister, Louise, and Emma's granddaughter, Lillian. Met with them. They were wonderful and very open. I've spoken on the phone with Emma's son, Nelson, and her oldest daughter, Esther, and they, too, very open with us. And I've also met a nephew of hers who's living in a house that she and Terry lived in the Gallup Police area. So they've all been wonderful, shared stories. I think the two most interesting stories I got from the relatives were when I talked to Esther. She was 90-something years old, I think 93. I called her in April of last year. She said, "Oh, I'm so glad you called today, because if you called yesterday, I wasn't here because I was leading a hike," she says, at 93. She was in Pennsylvania, and she went to they were having a hike at a park near her, and she went intending to be one of the hikers, period. Well, they had more hikers than they expected, so one of the rangers who knew her asked her if she wouldn't mind helping to lead. So she says to me, "Well, of course I did, but you know, if I'm leading a hike, I can't feel like I can just la-di-da around. I have to go at a quicker pace and, you know, be more up," she said. So when we got done, it was something like a 3-mile hike or something like that. She goes, "We got back and I was just exhausted," she said. Well, so we have this nice, wonderful, long chat about how she's been hiking away at 93 years old. A week later, I find out she passes away.
Oh, my goodness.
She was hiking up until she died. It's just incredible, an incredible story. And then the other interesting story was I met with her nephew, Tom Jones, who lives in the house that she and Terry lived in at one time. And he knew, both of them obviously, but he had this crazy story to tell about Perry, because there's like a barn in the backyard that they kind of rebuilt and put a new floor in and all this. And by the time this was happening, Perry was well up in years. And he had Perry come over and help him with the floor. And they were putting in a concrete floor. They were also putting in a cupola up on the top of the roof. And Perry used to like to go up on the roof. Well, unbeknownst to Tom, the nephew, the day before, Marjorie, the great-granddaughter, was telling me about one of her memories about Perry was that he loved to walk on his hands and stand on his hands. And all you do is dare him to stand on his hands. He would do this. So Tom didn't know that she told us this, and he said, "Well, the craziest thing about this Perry's up there, I don't know, he was like 80 or something, and they dared him to go up and stand on his hands up on the roof by the cupola, and he did." And I said, "Well, funny, that's what Marjorie said about him too, that he's just stand on his hands all the time." So it was like the whole family has these great genes and clearly a willingness to do things that are out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's amazing. And it's an inspiration. It's always, to me, it's just always an inspiration for those times. You know, I think there may have been times even when I was hiking where I'd be like, you know,
I would think about even anybody that had done this at a, either a super young age. I met a 5-year-old who had finished the White Mountains right before I went through, and so every time I would hit something that scared me, I'd be like, well, that child came down this. She might have gotten help or gotten, you know, a hand or something, but if she can do it, I can do it. And it's sort of that same thing. If Emma Gatewood can do this at 67, I can do it. You know, I can take that next step and go. And so it's such an inspirational story for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so inspiring all the way around.
Yeah.
And, of course, now, you know, we're looking at one of our funders for the story, the character program was the Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Lorraine here. And they're really interested in reaching out to ask at-risk girls to help them with their self-esteem. And they, of course, are seeing how inspirational this story is because in spite of the poverty, in spite of her difficult life, in spite of the abuse, she kept going and never gave up. And she dared to dream her dreams, and she dared to go make them come true.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what better inspiration is there at any age, really?
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious because I'm looking at the time and I want to be I don't want to take too much of anybody's time, but I'm curious if anybody on the call still has thought of, has any other questions. I just don't want to monopolize the conversation if there's something you wanted to ask or wanted to know if anybody has questions. So you've done such a good job telling us about her. I think everybody's just curious and is going to go online and see what else.
Either that
they
or they're in shock.
No, they're here. I can see them. No, that's... Well, thank you so much for telling
you,
us
Carla.
More about Emma Gatewood and her story and inspiring us that we don't need to have a lot of gear to hike the AT and we don't need to be super young to hike the AT. It's okay if we are young. And that anything, you know, any of this is possible. And I will put the information for our group up on our site so they everybody can find out more about her and about your programs. And
great.
I really hope that you'll continue to, I think that the ATC and some of the other Appalachian Trail organizations would so love to be connected with the programs you're doing and have that as some of their either education or entertainment, and or the Appalachian Trail Museum that's just started in Pine Grove Furnace, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Would be thrilled to connect with the work that you're doing as well. I really hope that, you know, Earl Schaefer has his books out and there are people bringing his stories and his poetry and all of his great work forward. And I think it's going to be really neat to see Emma Gatewood's, I would love to see her diaries. I think a lot of people would be very interested to see her story of her experience on the AT. So I look forward to seeing that come to fruition. And yes, we will definitely, I'll put out the word for Trail Magic Stories and have people get in touch with you.
Great. Thank you so much, Carla. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Betty Lou. And yeah, you'll be able to reach us and we'll know how to reach you. So thank you so much for taking the time and telling us about her.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.